Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton.
Hey, welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. Pretty much everything under the sun that relates to you having a happier, healthier relationship with money. My name is Steve Sexton. I want to thank you for joining us. I want to thank you for sharing with your friends and your family and associates. Our viewership is, our listenership is well over 500,000, and we appreciate that. Now, today, some interesting stuff. Remember the company Basecamp? They implemented some new regulations regarding doing away with paternalistic benefits, among other changes. The CEO even blog posted about it, causing tons of turmoil. The move that Basecamp did was supposedly intended to remove distractions in the office with the goal of distancing themselves from topics that can divert the focus of the company. The decision caused 5% of the employees to leave the company immediately. The company offered very severed packages to anyone who disagreed with the stance, resulting in another third of the company accepting these buyouts. Cryptocurrency company Coinbase made a similar decision earlier this year. Sensitivities are now at an all-time high these days, and the controversy is only wreaking more havoc on social platforms. The discussion of this decision have blown up Twitter unbelievably. We have David Knorr, author of Curvebenders, with us to discuss how the workplace is evolving along with America's current societal climate. It'll be an interesting discussion. You want to stick around for that. What are your financial blind spots? I'll be talking to you about that. That's something you don't want to miss because you never know when that blind spot's going to get you. So it's really important to understand what could be a blind spot and how to deal with it. One of the things is this: no one's immune to risk now or in the future. The key to managing risk in financial planning is to figure out what can be reduced, offloaded to a third party with strategies designed to protect you and your future. And 2020 taught us anything. It's that risk, change, and uncertainty are inevitable. So how can you take greater control of the risks associated with your financial plan? We have wealth manager, financial expert, John Smallwood, to help us through it. Especially, he's going to go on, hey, what's going to happen here next in 2021? So, John, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here today.
Well, I'm glad you're here as well, because the wisdom you can impart to our guests, because we're all about the ins and outs of money, is significant. Now, just so everybody knows, John's a CFP. He's a senior wealth advisor at Smallwood Wealth Management, provides investment consulting and financial plan design for corporate executive, entrepreneurs, and professionals. He's an author of It's Your Wallet, Keep It, The Definitive Guide to Growing, Protecting, Enjoying, and Passing on Your Wealth. He had a previous book, which I've actually read, called Five Ways Your Wealth is Under Attack, which I thought was a wonderful book. So, John, again, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, I just read a report, and it was by the Federal Reserve, that indicated 56% of people over the age of 45 were not comfortable with the amount of retirement savings that they actually have, and they feel like they might not be on track for retirement. And you probably heard that. You probably deal with people all day that. Is that right?
That's 100% right. There's an old thing when I came into the business in the late 80s, early 90s, and it was called the 100-man story. And it was out of 100 people that enter the workforce, how many people are actually successful when they hit retirement? Meaning, you know, they have enough money to sustain their current level of lifestyle, and it's less than 1%. Mm-hmm. So the majority of people are living on Social Security as their primary and only source of income, with some secondary work or relying on family members. That's what the study revealed. They recently updated like 2 years ago, and I was shocked that the results were just as bad as they were when I started. It's crazy. All this technology, all this news stations and podcasts and radio and internet searches, and we still have the same results. That's the problem.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's just too many people thinking they could do it tomorrow, and they procrastinate. They take on too much debt. Those are all there. You talked about 1980 when you first came into the business. Tell us a little bit about your story so people can get to know you.
Yeah. So 1990, not 1990.
Oh, 1990. I'm sorry. I didn't want to date you. I'm sorry.
It was 89. It was 89, 90. So what was interesting is I have this passion for boating, and I was working in the boat industry in the late 80s, and I was selling boats and I really loved it. And they introduced an excise tax, the luxury tax, right? Mm-hmm. And it destroyed and decimated that whole market. Meanwhile, I'm at Bentley and I'm an accounting major. I realize I don't like accounting. So I go economics and finance, and I get into the financial services business. Now, my father had been in the financial services business forever. The last thing in my mind at that moment is that's where I wanted to go. And what I realized is after the boating industry, I had some bad experiences. The people that I worked for padded the invoices, and you know, we worked on spread between cost of boat and what we sold it for. And I didn't get the commissions I was supposed to get. I was down on that. The market was down. My major, which was an economics finance major out of Bentley, everybody was getting a job at some of the big mutual fund companies doing the mutual fund accounting. And I was like, oh, that's really not a good thing for me. So the summer before I graduate, I got licensed in the life insurance business because that was the quickest thing that you could do within the time frame. The Series 7 would take too long. The summer would be consumed. And I ended up working and selling, and I did very, very well with it. And I ended up going through all these different job opportunities. And I thought to myself, being self-employed, being in my own business, being, you know, joining my father and figuring out how to work together with your family member would be in my best interest because I would control my outcome and control what I'm doing. You know, 31 years later, you realize all the pitfalls of all those things. But what I realized is it took my passion for economics and finance and it allowed me to apply it to personal planning. So what became very rewarding is how can you get somebody on track who, you know, 45 years old, not happy with where they are with their savings, and they know they're not going to have enough money. And what it began was this process of getting people to do the right things. Because if you do the right things, the success becomes more probable. You know, it's not going to happen every single time, but if you're doing the right things, it's the odds of success become much greater. And that's what we realize is it's not about rate of return. It's not about performance. It's not about the miracle product that the financial industry wants to push on you, that this is going to save everything. It's going to be the best thing. You've seen all the marketing, right?
Oh, yeah.
But it's not about that. It's about having the full balance and the full principles and doing, like, the most important thing that everybody can do is save money. You know, mm-hmm. And the right percentage, like when you look at what the population actually saves, it's a very small percentage of their income. And they're expecting that that little bit of money is going to get high rates of return. That's going to be their savior, right?
Yeah.
In my book, it's Your Wealth, Keep It. In the book, I have a whole chapter. Chapter 3 is dedicated on the mindset of the savings rate. And what happens is that person who undersaves therefore overspends, right? Yep. So if you and I make the same amount of income and I save 15% and you save 5, there's 10% spread. Then that money's going into spending. It's not going to savings, mm-hmm. right? So therefore you're going to accumulate less money, assuming our returns are the same. And when you get to retirement, your withdrawal rate's going to be bigger. And now your probability of running out of money is exponentially greater than the person who saves more. Mm-hmm. Right? It's like, that's the simple thing. But then life steps in and you're like, oh my God, you know, the furnace breaks, the kids need sports. Oh, I got to go to hockey camp, got to go to crew camp, got to go to, you know, I got 4 kids. You know, like, how did we get here? And it's all this financial pressure that we talk about that's coming at us from different spots. And that's why people aren't getting, I mean, life is getting in the way for so many people.
Oh, yeah.
And they're going to pay themselves later. Well, if I don't pay myself first, which is an old wives' tale, right? Pay yourself first. there's never going to be enough money left over at the end of the month in the checkbook to put aside. And people become victims to their budgets.
I actually agree with that. I see that all the time. And one of the reasons why the show is about the ins and outs of money, so people can learn the questions they need to ask to make prudent, informed financial decisions that'll impact the quality of your life. That's why people are like, you're here. How does somebody go about creating a plan?
There's many ways to get that done, right? So you can read a book and you can follow what the book says. You can talk to your parents. You can talk to your neighbor. You can hire a financial planner, a certified one. You can hire an investment advisor. There's so many ways to get a plan done, right? There's no one way to get that done. But I think what's really important, right, is there's fundamental principles that need to happen in the plan, meaning a good plan is going to focus on saving. It's going to focus on where to put that money so that you have tax efficiency, right? Mm-hmm. And then a good plan is simultaneously going to work on protecting the assets, meaning, you know, from a disability perspective, from a long-term care perspective, from a creditor proofing perspective, from ownership and maximum, you know, all that protection needs to be maximum at the same time. And what I find is people will do one thing and they forget everything else, right? So to get started, you really need to take a approach that is what I like to call macro, meaning I have to have all those things going on at the same time, maximum protection and maximum savings, and putting it in the right places with the right focus and the right idea. And it really, what I find is, and you probably have experienced this, where you read a book and you can go start implementing pieces of it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a couple of weeks go by, months go by, and then, you know, you're back to your old habits, or the diet book where you lose your 20 pounds and 3 months later, you're back up 25. right.
Well, I heard the story a lot.
If you hire a coach to help you with your diet plan, or a trainer, or somebody that's, you know, motivated to help you do that, usually the results are better. Right. Yep. So aligning yourself with a really good financial advisor who wants to grow with you. Okay. Meaning, you know, you may not have that much money today, but we're going to build a relationship over the next 20 years until you know, using your 45-year-old person, going to 65, let's build that wealth together. And let's, on a regular basis, let's go through all the core principles. How's the wealth protected? How is the savings, are the ratios right in the plan? And you're constantly updating the fundamental principles in the plan. And if you do that and you check in on a regular basis and you hold yourself accountable for the goals, I think that's how you make a plan, right?
Yep.
And you don't fall victim to, you know, get rich slow schemes or get rich fast schemes. I'm kidding. But, you know,
I was about to say the diet craze.
Right. You got to stay away from the fads, right? Because the fads and the bubbles and all the stuff that happens is, it's a portion of your money, fine, if you want to go chase it. But if you don't have the solid foundation, mm-hmm. that, right, for the location, like, you know, building a house is a very interesting example today, right? Because the housing market's on fire everywhere except Manhattan, okay? So when you look at it, well, there's many different ways to build a foundation. And there's no one best way to build a foundation. It depends upon where you're going to build the house. Mm-hmm. Right. If you're going to build it on the ocean and it's going to be in sand, you need stilts, right? And it needs to be a certain height. If you're going to build it on the side of a mountain, well, it's a completely different foundation than the stilts.
Yeah, that's true.
Right. So, but everybody in a financial world, that foundation has to be based upon their family circumstances. I'm 53 years old. I'm married. I have 4 kids that are 25 to 16. It's different what I'm doing now than when they were 1. Like, everything has changed. And that's the thing that people have this tendency to think about is, once I do it, I set it and I kind of forget that decision. And that's what causes the problems for so many people, is that I think I have that. I think I took care of that. Well, people would come to me and they say, if something happens to me, I'm going to send my spouse to you. And I'd be like, well, before something happens to you, let's make sure that when your spouse comes to me, everything's good, you know?
Well, it's interesting you say that, because many people are creating their own blind spot by not consistently taking a look at it and making small little adjustments or just reviewing it to make sure it's right.
Yeah. You think about it, it's so easy to get stuck in, it's summertime, or so we're going to go out and play golf, or we're going to play tennis because it's beautiful. We're going to go hiking and biking. And the last thing you want to do is dedicate time to your financial plan. And then you're working, you know, 8-10 hours a day and commuting and doing all those things. You don't have time to focus on these things. But I think it's the tools that you have. Like you have to realize that if my income is increasing, things in my plan need to change. If my income is decreasing, things in my
plan. John, I'm going to ask you to hold your thought. We're going to have to take a break real quick. Hey, everybody, we're going to be right back with more John Smallwood talking about financial planning, proper follow-up, all sorts of good stuff. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Did you know the average American has 97 points they could add to their credit score, but no idea how to get them? The data scientists at Scoremaster cracked the code on how. Adding 97 points to your credit score is like found money. It means fast loan approvals, huge discounts, and low interest rates on everything from buying or refinancing a home to leasing a new car to applying for a credit card. How fast is Scoremaster? One member raised his credit score 33 points in just 5 days, another 43 points in a couple of weeks. Scoremaster is so easy, it takes about a minute to get started. If you hurry, you can get to try Scoremaster for free. That's right, Scoremaster for free, and see how many plus points you can add to your credit score. Go to scoremaster.com/savings. That's scoremaster.com/savings. Again, that's scoremaster.com/savings.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hey, welcome back to the show. We're going to be talking with John Smallwood here. Hey, I truly thank you for tuning in and appreciate you letting your friends and family members know about the show. All replays are available at savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information, insight on Saving with Steve, then I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel so you never miss a show. Check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio USA, E360 TV, Las Vegas TV Network. All these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and live a life of personal and financial freedom. Hey, you can follow us on Facebook and join the Saving with Steve Sexton Facebook page, as well as get instant replays, exclusive access to our after-the-show videos, guest gifts, and more. So, John, welcome back to the show. We'll be talking about some financial planning here. We talked about people starting late. Is it too late to make changes?
Never, ever. When you think about it, let's just say that I'm 60 and I make $300,000 a year, and the plan that I've implemented for me to spend is going to be $70,000 a year, right? So I need to tell the truth about where I am, right? That's really the big thing, is accept the fact that I'm earning three and the plan that I've built is seven, but I still have time to work, okay? So do I want to have the abrupt stop, go from 300 to 70, or do I want to slowly change the way I'm doing it? I need to do a major overhaul of where I am right now, right? So you do a complete full-blown, you know, analysis of every dollar that goes through the plan, and you figure out, okay, I'm going to change my lifestyle, which is usually the biggest problem for most people, or the leaks that are going out. And there's tons of leaks. We can talk about that later, right? Finance charges, all kinds of crap, right? And that's a technical term. But the idea is that if I can say, I'm still going to make $300,000 a year, but in my mind, I'm going to fool myself that I only make 150. Okay. Now I can put away all that excess net after tax money and start saving it so that my 70s coming up over time. So if I can get to 67 or 70 working, and I can put away this extra money for the next 10 years or 5 years or 7 years, now my drop off is not going to be as far, and I'm going to feel a lot better about where I am situationally, because people get really depressed about this. Like people get really, really upset about, you know, I didn't do it. I thought I was going to have time. And it's the reality is certain habits need to change because those habits that you have taken you to the destination you are. Now, a lot of times stuff just happens, right? You know, business owners get drawdowns or, you know, traders, they lose money. COVID's a perfect example of that. Business owners have had some significant, you know, losses. Other ones have had significant windfalls, far greater than what they thought they were ever going to be. The jury's still out on how we come out of this thing. But to me, it's that realization of I'm here and my timeline is now short. Because I can remember like sitting 22 years old and I got my HP 12C calculator and
I had one of those.
40, it's 40 years of compounding. I got all the time in the world. Then it was 30 years of compounding. You know, now it's like 15, 20. 20. That compounding chain is decreasing. The time to get stuff done is really there. So do I want to take a ton of risk right now, or do I want to be more secure in where I'm putting money? So if I can dump more money into savings and I can accumulate it in a way that is, you know, more secure, but yet has some growth potential in it, then the probability of me retiring the way I want to retire is going to be better and I'm sustainable. You know, that's the key, is really understanding where you are and assessing it and telling the truth and fixing it. You could be 75 and retired for 10 years and you're on a trajectory of spending down your money and you're kind of ignoring it. Right? That's what I see happen. Oh, I'll worry about it later. No, let's worry about it right now. Let's fix the problem. The problem was in the budget. It's not in, you know, the money that you have. Well, maybe it is the money that you have, but you know what I'm saying? Like we have to tell the truth about where you are and make really good steps.
I was just thinking the last thing you want to do is walk into the doctor when you're 80. He goes, yeah, you're going to live another 5 years, but you don't have that much money left. Yeah. That's not a fun place to be.
I mean, so how many people want to spend, you know, the old joke in the industry is, well, you're going to spend your last dime and then die. But what if you live an extra 5 years? So you can't predict the outcome, right? You don't know when it's going to happen. I remember early on in my career, I encountered this very large client and he said, this financial advisor did this plan for me. Take a look at it. And, you know, I think it's a good plan and we're following the plan. I go, do you realize you're running out of money at age 85 in this plan? He goes, what? I go, you're running out of money. The plan has you $0 at age 85 to hit the lifestyle that you want to hit. He goes, that's not true. I go, here it is. I go, that's not a good plan. I go, shouldn't it be 100 plus or minus? Because we don't know which way it's going to go. He goes, yeah, my mother's like 96 years old at the time. This is back, you know, 28 years ago. And he's like, oh my God, this, I had no idea. That wasn't disclosed to me. I'm like, you know, so people aren't even paying attention to some of the stuff that they're doing because they're so focused on their business. And then when you rework the plan, if you ran out of money at age 85 and you live to 105, the last 20 years was, you know, you're relying on your kids and your kids are pissed at you now.
Yeah. That's all you need. Your kids pissed after you when you pass.
Or the last 20 years of your life, you know?
Oh yeah. There's gives a new meaning, ashes to ashes.
Yeah. But it's that intention of fixing and it constantly adjusting and adapting to where you are. If income goes up, you know, savings rates should go up correspondingly. Income goes down. Well, what do we need to, you know, is it temporary or is it going to be long? You know, a lot of people get downsized out of jobs in their late 50s, thinking they've got another 10 years at that high income level. And the reality is they never seem to recover because they're still living in the past of where they were. And my feeling is you can't change where you are. You can't change where you are. You can change where you're going.
Yep.
And that's the key. Change where you're going.
So the key here is what you're saying is if you have a plan, it needs to be reviewed and adjusted almost every quarter, 6 months, every year, at least once a year to make sure you're on path to get to where you want to go. And
people put plans in place, just like you said, with the diets and all the fads and everything. I'm going to bet it's the same when it comes to finances, where people don't like to do the hardest part of that plan, and that might be reducing expenses moving forward. They'll save some stuff, but they won't reduce the expenses, which means they won't put themselves in a position to have that dream retirement that they're looking for.
Yeah. I mean, I do this thing with new clients or their existing clients that we gather all the income sources, right? We say, okay, what did you earn for the year? Dividends, interest, rental income, earned income, bonuses, salaries. Take your savings rate where you know you actually save money, 401k, permanent insurance, savings accounts, stock brokerage accounts, money that you could see that went in there that didn't come back out, right? Like a lot of people put money in savings accounts, but then the money comes back out during the year to cover expenditures. That's not savings. That's just putting money aside. So it's not in the checkbook, right? It's the money that sticks in the savings account. So you take the income minus the savings, minus the taxes, minus the principal interest taxes and maybe homeowners association fee or something like that on your house, any debt payments that you have, any insurance costs that you have, okay, add up all those insurance costs, and what's left over is the lifestyle. And then if you do the math, right, and you say, well, I make 100 and I put away 10,000, I paid 20,000 in taxes, and there's 50,000 going out for the lifestyle. And people go, that's not true. We're not spending that much money. I'm like, well, it's not in the savings account. It's not in the 401k. Where is it? And people will leave and get angry, go home. And I said, get some kind of budget tool, get something to track your finances. You're not tracking their finances. And they come back and they go, I'm so embarrassed. I had no idea that we were spending as much money as we were. Because people say arbitrarily, oh, I need $5,000 a month to retire. And a lot of financial advisors will build a $5,000 a month plan, but the client needs seven. Mm-hmm. That plan's destined for failure.
That is. Hey, we have about a minute left. I'd like to talk to you about what the rest of 2021 looks like.
Up, down, left, right. Big tax law changes, lots of things to scratch your head about, bubbles, volatility, you know, masks and opening and shutting and closing. Like what I've realized, I can't predict how the end of the day is going to go as far as the end of the year. But here's my expectation. We're going to see some tax law changes that are going to have an impact in a lot of ways. We're going to see the opening of the country that's going to have some starts and stops because you're going to have some issues with that. We're seeing large infrastructure bill trying to get passed. It's either going to get passed or some different version of that's going to get passed. We just saw something very interesting with that pipeline shutdown on the East Coast, right? Mm-hmm. That was very interesting and very revealing that we can be hacked in numerous ways, right? So I think the threats of that are going to be high, and that's going to test our resolve to push through these things, okay? Yep. From a market standpoint, price to earnings ratios are at historical highs, right? So I would expect a lot of volatility, but with the amount of money that's getting pushed into the economy, that you would expect the market to be up, but you're seeing a lot of pressure to pull this market down for a lot of reasons. So I would expect that we would see a lot of volatility. I don't know if it actually comes down, but I would expect a lot of volatility. And interest rates, I think interest rates went up way too quick because there was no movement on the Fed. It was just supply demand. And I would think you would start to see that back off again and get back into the 1.3% range on the 10-year treasury. I've been predicting interest rates are going to rise for about 13 years and I've been dead wrong. So eventually it should happen, but I don't think we're ready for rising interest rates for a lot of reasons in the economy.
John, I want to thank you for joining us today. Hey, if somebody wants to get a hold of you, how do they do that?
Visit smallwoodwealth.com or 732-542-1565 is the office. They can go to our website at smallwoodwealth.com. We have an unbelievable amount of tools, podcasts. We have some free guides that you can download. You can link to the book at Amazon and buy the book. It's Your Wealth, Keep It. We had Amazon bestseller for about 2 minutes back in December. So we get to say we were a bestseller in retirement, which is great. It was only about 2 minutes, but I'll take it. And you can, right on our website, you can schedule a, you know, free, no obligation conversation.
Stick with us. We're going to be right back.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hey, welcome back to the show. This is Steve Sexton. That was John Smallwood. Wasn't he just outstanding? Great financial information. Right now, I'm going to be talking to you on what are your financial blind spots. This is really important. Knowing how much money you have to cover your bills is just a start, but it's not enough to create financial literacy to provide long-term security. Most of them eventually wonder what else should we be doing and whether what we don't know could hurt us. When you have a blind spot, you don't realize until something blindsides you. The key is learning the questions you need to ask in order to make prudent, informed financial decisions that impact the quality of your life. First of all, you want to look at identifying the gaps. You can do this through self-assessment. You can go to online quizzes at the Financial Health Network, or as well as personal financial books. You can go to websites that can help you shine a light on what you don't know. There's five things that you probably want to look at that really determine how well somebody is managing money. One, first two habits are saving and investing. Bottom line, they're crucial. Two, good money managers. Knowing how credit works, having a plan to build wealth and paying off debt. And last but not least, know what passive income is and how to create it. If anything on this list is unfamiliar to you, that suggests a good starting point. There are plenty of resources that you can just Google away to find them. Now, the key here is to nail the basics, then keep learning. Before it gets a little too complex, you just want to start with saving as an essential habit. Budgeting. If you don't have a formal budget, you can go to Google and create one. Planning for emergencies. You can't forbid unexpected expenses, but an emergency fund, excellent credit insurance, are all of those can help keep you from devastating your finances. Next, protect your money and assets to credit. Here's how. Check your credit score and report. Lenders and potential landlords or employers may see those, so it's smart to know what's on there. In addition, a big swing in your credit score or an account on your credit report you don't realize could suggest identity theft. You can check your credit report once a year by going to annualcreditreport.com. Many personal finance sites, your credit card issues provide access to a free credit report. You want to make sure you practice good, safe social media. I'm going to say cyber hygiene, to lack of a better word. That means avoiding public Wi-Fi, being careful about what you post on social media, not opening email attachments or link you weren't expecting, and using strong passwords. Hey, you might even consider freezing your credit so you could see if somebody's going to add credit to you, as well if you're a parent for your children. And it reduces the likelihood that you'll become a victim of identity theft. Setting alerts on your credit card accounts can also let you know when they're being used. Learn to recognize scams. You know what? Scammers, they try to create this sense of urgency so that you pay first and think later. They know how to make phone calls, emails, and text communications seem real. pause before acting, independently confirm the contact information, initiate communication yourself. And remember that no one legitimate asks for payment via gift card or prepaid debit card. Biggies, set goals for yourself. And remember, those are your goals. They're individual goals. One of the most critical lessons to learn is to stay focused on your needs, not what someone who doesn't know you, your goals, or your life is saying. Consider working with a financial advisor, a financial coach, okay, to help identify your own goals and the path you want to take to save. Avoid overconfidence. We see this all the time. If you've had some success investing in a bull market or in an up market, okay, great. You might not be an investing genius. Feedback from a financial advisor may help you decide whether you're smart or just darn lucky. If you're a parent, help your children become financial literate. Helping children see how money is relevant is important. Let them see how you make financial decisions. Then let them make a few of their own. Let them make some mistakes in the control of mom or dad. The more financially literate are, the better off they will be when it comes to their finances and their retirement. One of the things I want to say here is this: you don't need to be a financial encyclopedia. You don't need to be walking around going to classes all the time. There are things you may never need to know, or that you can learn when they become relevant or you need to know them. Examples: financial consequences of big life changes, such as a marriage, a divorce, parenthood, or death of a spouse, refinancing a mortgage, whether you're going to rent or buy, saving for college, RMDs. One of the big things I can say right now is this: you don't want to wait. While no one wants to make a mistake, the costliest ones may be waiting until you have extra money or feel more confident about financial decisions. The sooner you start saving and investing, the more compound interest you can grow your wealth. The big thing here is this: people don't understand the time value of money. Every day you postpone is another day you will have to work. Okay. So think about this. Get yourself slowly but surely educated. Do things in your time span. Okay. So that's very, very important. Now, this segment was brought to us by Scoremaster.com. Did you know the average American has 97 points they could add to their credit score, but have no idea how to get them? The data scientists at Scoremaster cracked the code on how. Adding 97 points to your credit score is like found money. It means fast loan approvals, huge discounts, low interest rates on everything from buying or refinancing a home to leasing a new car to applying for a credit card. How fast is Scoremaster? One member raised his credit score 33 points in 5 days, another 43 points in a couple of weeks. Scoremaster is so easy, it takes about a minute to get started. And if you hurry, you get to try Scoremaster for free. That's right, Scoremaster free. See how many plus points you can add to your credit score. Go to scoremaster.com/savings. That's scoremaster.com/savings. Again, that's scoremaster.com/savings. Again, I want to thank scoremaster.com for sponsoring the show in this segment. Next, we have David Noir, who's going to talk about the employment situation, how it's changing, how society is changing, and the impact that have come due to just a few things that have happened in the marketplace and the things that CEOs are doing to try to take the politics and the social out of their business, and it's costing them some good employees. So stick with us. We're going to be right back.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Did you know the average American has 97 points they could add to their credit score, but no idea how to get them? The data scientists at Scoremaster cracked the code on how. Adding 97 points to your credit score is like found money. It means fast loan approvals, huge discounts, and low interest rates on everything from buying or refinancing a home to leasing a new car to applying for a credit card. how fast is Scoremaster? One member raised his credit score 33 points in just 5 days. Another 43 points in a couple of weeks. Scoremaster is so easy, it takes about a minute to get started. If you hurry, you can get to try Scoremaster for free. That's right, Scoremaster for free, and see how many plus points you can add to your credit score. Go to scoremaster.com/savings. That's scoremaster.com/savings. Again, that's scoremaster.com/savings.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Welcome back to the show. We had John Smallwood talking about everything from what he expects to happen in 2021 to how to create a plan, then it's not too late. We also talked about financial blind spots. I just want to say this one more time. You have that company Basecamp, great company, but what they did is they implemented new regulations doing away with paternalistic benefits, among other changes. And the CEO blog posted about it, caused a whole bunch of turmoil. Right at the beginning, 5% of the company left. And then they created a severance for everybody who didn't agree with the new program. And a third of the company left. Basically, their whole goal as a company, which most companies' goals are to make sure people are focusing on the company's mission, but it didn't work out that way. And then we have Coinbase doing something similar. And all this is creating such a storm on Twitter, social media, and it's wreaking havoc. And a lot of companies are trying to figure out what's going on. This is the reason why we have David Knorr here. David's an advisor for Fortune 500 executives. He's a professor at Emory University. He's been featured in the Wall Street Journal, New York Times. He's got 11 books. His new book called Curve Benders is out. We'll talk a little bit about that. David, I want to thank you for joining the show.
Steve, it's good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate that. Could you share a little bit of your history with our guests so they can get to know you a little bit before we get into the content?
Happy to. I'm a first generation immigrant. I came to the US May 23rd, 1981. So literally coming up on 40th anniversary of coming to this country. And Steve, I came with $100, a suitcase. I didn't know anybody and didn't speak a word of English. I literally landed at JFK with a badge around my neck, put this kid on an Eastern airline flight to Atlanta. And by the way, he doesn't speak a word of English. Mom and dad are retired teachers. They still live back in Iran. I came and lived with an aunt and uncle that I hadn't seen since birth. Mm-hmm. In order for me to stay here, mom and dad gave me up for adoption. Aunt and uncle adopted me. I finished high school here. I got my Eagle Scout here. And I got to tell you, I feel blessed. I'm living the American dream every day because I got an undergrad degree when I got a graduate degree, spent early part of my career in technology sales and sales management. And then subsequent to the grad school, went to consulting and private equity route. And for the last 19 years, I've had my own practice, as you were kind enough to mention, working with predominantly large enterprises on really innovative growth, on how do they leverage strategic relationships to accelerate and fuel that growth. And the Basecamp and the Coinbase you're talking about is exact example of one of the biggest relationships most leaders and organizations neglect, which is, Steve, their intra-company relationships. You talk about relationships, most people are thinking customers and analysts and partners and distribution and outside the place. If it's dysfunctional on the inside, everybody sees it. And when you have these scenarios blow up, it's just a sign of that dysfunctional internal relationships.
When I first read the story, I just thought to myself, wow, inside the company, they have their own cancel culture. This is nuts.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because, again, a few years ago, we used to call it politically correct. Now it's woke and it's cancel culture. And it is a real challenge for every leader. You know, I want the best employees I can attract. But you know what? Those employees are going to have opinions and they're going to have ideologies and they're going to have values. And by the way, they have a freedom of speech. Are you really going to try to block that or say at the gates of the door? Nope, we can't have that, because that's exactly what's going to happen, as you've seen with some of these companies. By the same token, the struggle, the real friction is a lot of my clients are P&L executives who are responsible for building products and services and serving their customers. Mm-hmm. And if you create such an environment, such a divisive environment inside your company that regrettably we've had in our political environment. When do we actually get any work done? When do we actually take care of customers? When do we actually generate revenue?
Here's an interesting thing, though. When I first started in the corporate world, way back when, it was one of those things where, you know, you gave advice, but you really didn't give an opinion, especially on the political or all the other stuff. And you worked really hard and you did what the boss says, because it was an entirely different environment for most baby boomers out there. And at the tail end of the baby boomers, but you know, it's like, wow, it's entirely different, because now you got millennials, Gen Xers, Gen Zs, and all that stuff. And they have a different idea about life. And the feeling where it used to be all about the company and all that stuff, now it's one of those things where they want something that has a social cause to it. And if you're no longer adhering to that social cause, they just might jump ship. They might be your best employee.
You're exactly right. And that's what I said. It's an evolution of the way we lead. Because when you and I went to work, we didn't bring politics or our ideology. We did the job and we got a paycheck. You know, we felt like we were lucky to have that job.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. Now, what we're seeing is an inherent friction, conflict. Steve, in some ways, head-on collision between an individual's personal values. And it's not right or wrong. It's just things that they deeply believe in, things, causes that they care about, in direct conflict sometimes with the organizations they work for. And what happens is the resignations come from those misaligned values. So then as I explore that and I see increasingly more examples of it, I'm always thinking, so what's the answer? What's the solution here?
Yeah.
And I think it's really incumbent on both sides. So I'm going to date myself. I grew up in the Ronald Reagan, Tip O'Neill days. And for our audience, right, Reagan, staunch conservative, mm-hmm. Tip O'Neill, very much a kind of liberal, you know, Speaker of the House. They may have not liked each other, but they got things done through civil discourse. And they found common ground. And there was just a lot of kind of give and take, and they found a way to work together. Again, it's very easy for all of us to blame our more recent political climate.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not a political statement, but when you've got a decisive culture and a society, rightfully so, those beliefs, right, wrong, indifferent, are going to spill into work. So I think employees, as you're interviewing for a job, you need to understand what your values are. And you better start asking some really good questions in that interview process of what does the company believe in? Conversely, I've found most of my clients are 50-50 split, right? Some believe they should absolutely take a stand on these social causes and injustices that they perceive are going on in our society. Others are, listen, that's nothing we can control. And the political climate they don't believe should guide their values. But the key is both sides have to do a better job on trying to align their personal and organizational purpose, values, the things they believe in.
Hey, David, stick right there for a second. We're going to take a little break. Everybody, we have David Knorr sharing some pearls of wisdom to understand what is actually happening in the workplace right now and how people need to morph a little bit. So stick with us. We're going to be right back with more David Knorr.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show.
Did you know the average American has 97 points they could add to their credit score, but no idea how to get them? The data scientists at Scoremaster cracked the code on how. Adding 97 points to your credit score is like found money. It means fast loan approvals, huge discounts, and low interest rates on everything from buying or refinancing a home to leasing a new car to applying for a credit card. How fast is Scoremaster? One member raised his credit score 33 points in just 5 days, another 43 points in a couple of weeks. Scoremaster is so easy, it takes about a minute to get started. If you hurry, you can get to try Scoremaster for free. That's right, Scoremaster for free, and see how many plus points you can add to your credit score. Go to scoremaster.com/savings. That's scoremaster.com/savings. Again, that's scoremaster.com/savings.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals.
It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Welcome back to the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. And we're talking with David Knorr. We're talking about what's happening in the workplace in American society here today. We've been talking about how the workplace is currently evolved. How can business leaders manage needs to insulate their organizations from this controversy? What do they need to do? And you talked about the employees got to be doing some, and so does management.
Yeah, I think it would be a really, as a leadership team, as a CEO or functional leaders or business owners or whatever leadership position you're in, you cannot, my biggest coaching advice is you cannot let any political climate, any political agenda drive your values, right? You have to have your own values and things you believe in and things that you're going to adhere to. And my strongest suggestion is 4 or 5 pillars, if you will, of values that are the bedrock of the organization you're trying to build. And if you are open and public, and those values are crystal clear. And by the way, Steve, they just can't be lip service. It cannot be boxes we check off. You have to live those values. You have to, just like your brand, you have to show up. As a matter of fact, I deeply believe in that corner office. That corner office has fundamentally two jobs and two jobs only. One is brand. What's our promise to the market? What do we deliver? Our products, our services, our value to the market is our brand. The second one is your culture. The second one is the talent we attract, we retain, we develop that delivers that brand, value. So if the corner office focuses on those two things, your core values becomes part of the culture. I often remind leaders, your culture is really the culmination of behaviors you're willing to tolerate.
That's interesting.
Right? If you model the right behaviors, you should have that expectations from everybody. If you're not modeling it, we've got different issues.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to also, what are the behaviors you're willing to tolerate? And I think those, so have those values, articulate those values, and hire against those values. If you do that, you have a much better chance of getting that alignment between the employees, not just for their skills and competencies, but also their values.
Wow. We're looking to hire people that have similar values to us. And what we're going to do is we're going to promote those values, whether it be advertising for or recruiting somebody, how we live. We are not going to have, if we talk about equity, inclusivity, we're going to have a multiple different people from different backgrounds as part of our board, part of our management team to give that diversity. We're probably going to have different age people there to make that work. And if somebody wants that environment and it's, you see it on the sleeve, so to speak, you'll track those people.
You're exactly right. And by the way, if you have those values, let's just say integrity. You said it, equity, right? And you don't live those. What you're demonstrating clear and loud is hypocrisy, right? Mm-hmm. And it's I call it wall art, right? Have you seen organizational mission and vision and all of our values on the wall? But then that's not what you experience. And if you think of that employee experience, it's really culmination of their observations. It's culmination of what they go through in their employment journey over some period of time. And if I continue to see misalignment between the things you're saying, we value our people. Do you really? Or do you, first time, a friction point of friction comes up, you're sweeping it under the rug. And again, that's where you see the Basecamp or Coinbase type just mass migration of the talent leaders. It is just like, this is no longer a place where I want to align my values, my capabilities, my competencies, my personal brand with this company.
Yeah, it's no longer the promised land they thought it was. So that's really very interesting. So now let's take a look at this from the person that wants to come into the company. What would be the vision that person would want to, obviously you don't want to have rose-colored glasses, but you want to say, okay, I'm coming in here. What kind of questions should I be asking? What should I be thinking if I'm looking to evaluate this company or talking to those people as I'm interviewing to see if it'd be a right fit for me?
Unequivocally, I tell every candidate, regardless of whether you're in the spring of your career or in the fall of your career, in any interview process, you're interviewing them as much as they're interviewing you. So first and foremost, what kind of due diligence have you done? There's a whole plethora of, from Glassdoor to, there's a whole bunch of other websites that I can go find out. What's the perception? What's the, you know, input from current and other employees about the company, about the leadership, Steve, about individual leaders? There are now comments about specific CEOs of companies. Great. That person is not somebody you want to work for. Mm-hmm. And if you do that level of due diligence, then you shouldn't be surprised when you do go in, when you accept a job, and that's exactly the toxic environment that you've walked into, right? What did you expect? Did you think all of those people were mistaken or lying? Or what did you think that was going to happen? So extensive due diligence. Uh-huh. Two, Steve, I often try to find not just current. Current employees would be great, but former employees.
How do you find former employees?
LinkedIn.
Okay.
I can get on LinkedIn and I can search former company was, and I can search former title was. Let's say I'm applying for a manager of customer service. I can find former customer service people at that company, and I reach out to them with a message. Hey, I'm exploring a role in this company. I understand you were there. Would you be kind enough to just spend a few minutes and tell me about your experience? I'm not hunting for just the negative. I want to walk in with my eyes wide open. I want to walk in to really understand what am I walking to? Because by the way, in that dating period, nobody says we're an awful place to work. We don't want to attract at all. We're not going to communicate. We're not going to talk to you. Nobody does that. Yeah. Everybody puts their best foot forward, candidates and companies. Mm-hmm. Regrettably, if you don't do your due diligence, you accept the job. It looks rosy, looks great, sounds great. You show up, typically within the first 6 months, you're asking yourself, what the heck did I get myself into?
Yeah. I think we all been there. And I think that's great. It's great advice for anybody who, you know, I have a son who's graduating from college, engineering and all that, and he's going to be looking for a job. And his goal is to obviously sell himself. And I think this is great wisdom for anybody walking into the workforce, is to do your homework. Because the last thing you want to do is be in a position where you need to get out in 6 months. Obviously, it doesn't look good on a resume. You want to do that due diligence. I appreciate you saying that.
Absolutely. And again, it's as good for your son or my daughter, who again, are in the spring of their careers. But I'm also coaching a senior executive at a globally recognizable brand that, Steve, after 18 months, he's figured out he's the wrong person in the wrong role in the wrong company.
Oh, wow.
So it happens. And this is a Ivy League graduate, right? With, you know, baby boomer, who's been very successful, and the company pursued him. Mm-hmm. And 18 months later, he figures out he is the wrong person in the wrong role in the wrong company. And I've always said, relationships go bad with misaligned expectations.
Yes.
You said we were going to do this. This is what I experienced. The gap is where we have a problem. So if you work that much harder to align and then recalibrate those expectations, you have less of a chance of things blowing up. So that's another thing to think about, is how can I align? Are we on the same page? Are we, help me understand? Are we, right? I think if you do more of that, less of a chance of things going sideways.
Hey, David, we have about 45 seconds left of our time. Could you tell us about your book, Curve Benders?
Sure. It's book number 11. It's at the intersection of future of work. So how will work live, play, and give, and the role of strategic relationships in really creating a profound impact in our lives. So in that growth journey, certain relationships come into our lives that change both our direction and destination. And I call those relationships curve benders.
That's wonderful. Hey, if somebody wants to reach out to you for your coaching services, how do they get a hold of you?
The best place is our website, just Noor Group, N-O-U-R-Group.com. I would also encourage your audience, if you go to noorgroup.com/forum, we have a private online forum. I'm there every day. We're about 2,500 people there, and we talk about a lot of these types of ideas. So come join us.
Thank you. I will. David, thank you for joining us. It's been wonderful having you. Probably even look forward to having you again in the future. So be safe, be healthy, and we'll see you next time.
Sounds great. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton.